The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another Mission Minded, along with Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, down there in beautiful Montgomery, Alabama, the capital city, of course, of the great state of Alabama. I'm Tony Curry, Mission Minded. We talk about business here on the show, and gave you a little homework from last week. I gave you an entire week to finish it up, Michael. First of all, how are you, my friend? Everything going good?
I'm doing great. It's always great to see you, my brother.
What did you do with the hour of sleep you lost? Did you? Everyone's freaking out because I'm like, these are the same people that go on cross-country trips and talk about they're going to be tired for like the next 45 to 50 years because they lost an hour of sleep. I'm assuming you did okay.
Well, when you go to bed at 8:30 like I do now, losing an hour of sleep doesn't crush you like it used to.
So we were talking last week, and I got to be honest with you because and I wrote it down because I knew that I'd forget. But we were talking about how we're changing. And how to change. And I think the article you talked about was the best part about changing and adapting in the business world. And somehow you and I started talking about politics and we kind of threw out the idea of it's really interesting when you've dug in your heels in on something and it could be moralistic. It could be something you believed in ever since you were a child. It could be something as recent as politics itself, where you really believe in something. And then all of a sudden something hits you. And you start looking at the other side. You start going, yeah. Wait a minute, let me look at this other side. Let me debate this a little bit. And somehow you actually switch other sides from something you would never thought in a million years you would have thought. And so I was asking you, is there any, and I used the example of red beets. I used to hate red beets. And it was probably because my mom used to force them down my throat. And then somewhere like in my mid-30s, I don't know, I was like 35, 36, 37, and I can't remember why, I started loving red beets, and now I love red beets. I mean, I loathe red beets. I hated red beets. I mean, I it would make me gag to even think about red beets. And now I like red beets, and I'm thinking to myself, well, how cool would it be if we could take some things where we're trying to get other people to see our side of arguments or debates or at least see the other side of anything. If somehow we could figure out what it takes to turn that switch. Is there anything specifically that you had early in your life that you were like, and I'll be honest with you, and I was, you know, I consider myself a Christian. I believe that abortion was okay when I was in my 20s and my 30s. Yeah. Probably because if I had impregnated somebody in my 20s and 30s before I was married, I may have to go on that route. Sure. I saw nothing wrong with it. And I was I was Catholic. You know, I consider myself a good human being, and now looking back on that, I'm thinking to myself, what in the world was I thinking? The fact that I would even consider that. Now, obviously, along with older age and being around my mentors and stuff, you change and you get older and smarter. And so now I look back on that and I go, wow. And I try to be more understanding of that. But is there anything particularly that changed in your life? And I want to continue this. And we get some emails as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like you talked about this relative moralism, you know, it's like, yeah, here are my morals, here are my values. But sometimes those butt up into things to where you're like, okay, well, you know, it'd be easier if I didn't really have that. So I'm going to kind of let that slide today. So I've been right where you are. And that's part of what people talk about is, you know, you're hypocritical. And there's been so many times in my life, I have been hypocritical. But changing, I had to come to terms with the idea of changing your mind in and of itself is not hypocritical. It's actual real growth. And I remember wrestling with all this and things happening in my life. And I said, you know, do I want to, because some people, if you can structure your values, and we talked about under a political party, it wouldn't matter if it's under a political party, but you're like, okay, well, this is who I am, and these are the core values that I have, and we want to identify that, and we don't want to change that, and we just get comfortable in that. And we really, if you think about it like a house of cards, we really don't want somebody coming and playing around with the cards, because if you think about it, all I have to do is pull one of those cards out of the bottom, and then the whole system comes falling down. And I recognize that both theologically in my view of God, but also how I was viewing other people. And, you know, of course, a lot of us are guilty of this, you know, being in our 20s and think we've got it all figured out. We're very sure. black and white. No, this is right. This is wrong. Mm-hmm. I remember one time when I was commander of a unit, it was one of the most embarrassed that I had been. A person came in that I had gotten a report, had done something wrong, and his platoon leader came in with him. And I heard one side of the story, and then I made a decision about what their punishment would or wouldn't be. I don't even remember what the offense was. But later on, the other side came in with their platoon leader and their leadership. And I remember going, well, I've already decided this. You know, I have a bit of an impulsive nature. It's one of the things I work against, or that it can be positive, but sometimes it can be negative. And I just wanted to resolve this issue. So I listened to one side, made a decision. Well, it was totally unjust. Once I heard the other side, then I recognized I cannot stand by my position. So I had to call the other people back in and then go in and explain how I ended up where I ended up. But it really caused me this was in my early 30s to say, you know, am I just looking for a position or am I genuinely seeking truth? Because in genuinely seeking truth, I have to listen to people that I may not want to hear their opinion. I may not want to know that there's an aspect of truth because their side may represent something that I don't like or I don't value. But what I have forced myself to do is say, listen, I'm not going to carry the water for anybody, any organization, any issue, any political party, any particular denomination. I just want to be a seeker of truth, which means that I have to be willing to listen to all sides. And sometimes in very complex issues and take what I'm learning or take what I'm hearing, apply logic to it, apply reasoning, all those kind of things, and then come up with where, you know, I feel like that leads me if I'm going to be an honest broker and then be strong enough to stand up and go, I can't decide right now. I'm still out here searching. You know, I've listened to both sides. It's not a lack of information, but I hear things on both sides that kind of pull me. And so, but this is what maturity, I think that's growth as opposed to some people that goes, wait a minute, you're more indecisive now. You're going against, you may have used to believe this, now you believe this. And people may say, oh, you're betraying your values. Your traditional values, are you? But, and to me, I'm like, no, I'm just genuinely seeking truth. And if that truth leads me down the path of my traditional values, then I'm wholeheartedly going to defend that once I come to an understanding.
There's a big loaded question here, and you probably won't be able to answer because it is so large. But is there anything in your life that you thought to yourself, wow, I like you really believed in something for a long period of time, and all of a sudden you just totally saw it different because you were seeking that truth. And then by the time you did your research, and by the way, I love what you just said, because I think there's a lot of us that just, we don't have the answers. We don't know. And everyone wants us to be black or white, right or left. Everyone wants us to have an answer. And then one of the reasons we talked about this, and it just started coming back to me, was we were talking about, I'd heard these individuals, a Democrat and a Republican, who used to be just the opposite 2 years ago. Yeah. And if you walk up to a Democrat now and say, I used to be a Republican, they look at you like you got three eyeballs. How in the world could you change parties? I mean, that's like an Auburn coach becoming an Alabama coach. I mean, how's that even possible? And it is. And I look at that and I think that's growth. That's cool. I think that's neat that you're willing to change your mind despite the fact you're going to have people that are going to run all over you and say, how in the world can you take this, your agenda, your platform, but these ideologies, when you're willing to change your ideologies. I mean, we got terrorist groups that believe that it's perfectly fine to go kill humans, you know, based off all or based on whatever they believe in spiritually. And all of a sudden they get out of that. And then they realize, what was I thinking? But I mean, at that point in time, they actually believed that killing another innocent human being was okay.
Right. You know, right. Well, and I think of it, probably the greatest transformation in my thinking has revolved around my own personal faith. Now, my core belief in God and who God proclaims himself to be has not changed. That has just continues to reaffirm itself. But I have opened myself up to say, look, I want to be a true seeker of God. This is who I believe. This is what my logic tells me. But when you get into the denominational divisions, and I grew up in a Protestant denomination, and that as you go to each one and you're like, wait a minute, it's just like a political party in that, well, if I'm going to be this, then you kind of take the whole package and you kind of wear that label. And I remember going to my wife one time because when I went to school and started taking the original languages, at one time I was in a PhD program. I didn't finish it. But I took four semesters of Hebrew, and as I researched original languages and learned how to read and study in the Hebrew, I had to go back and tell my wife, what we believe about this or what we've always been taught by this is absolutely not true. Now, it's not earth-shattering like God doesn't exist or, you know, whatever, but it was some particular thing that we as a denomination held on to based on this particular these particular verses of scripture. And I said, I absolutely see that that was completely in error. And then I said, so do I then stand up and proclaim that to other people in a way that helps inform them? And I really recognized that the issue could be very small, the issue could be large, but it was just like I was coming up. People responded just like I was pulling that card out of their house of cards, and they were afraid that their whole system of faith would come tumbling down if anybody. And my response is, I want you to come tug at the loose strings, because if I've got loose strings and I have something wrong, I want to grow. I want to know what that is. And if that means I have to go back and re-examine certain aspects of my faith, or re-examine certain values I have or certain alignments with political parties or groups or whatever. Hey, if I'm a truth seeker, then I've got to be willing to put all my beliefs under examination all the time and not be afraid of where that might lead.
And again, and it's amazing how often we talk about it. You make decisions based off love or fear, one of the two. It's either one or the other. And Jesus did it in everything he did. And that's the other thing. And I think it's just a beautiful thing. I pray every morning to God just to give me the willingness. Just let me be willing to see the other side. Keep my heart open, particularly when I'm going into a situation where I know I'm not going to see the other side clearly. If I believe something, it could be a business meeting. It could be something with my brother. It could be a fight with my wife, whatever. You know, let me be willing and let me be open-hearted let me be able to pause and pray and take a second to actually think before I speak. And I think that's so vitally important. It really is.
And you think how often we go into situations knowing that's going to be the case. There may be a contentious issue at your place of worship. There may be a contentious issue at work where you know there's varying opinions. And especially in leadership, it's very important that you don't, you know, everybody's going to have their initial gut reaction or gut opinion. But when you've got a group of people in there and you're the leader, it looks like, no, it's my way or the highway. That's very demoralizing to those who feel like, hey, it's not that I just feel this way, but I logically have thought it through like my boss says he has. And I've reached a different conclusion, and I would at least like the space to be able to voice that. And so I try to do that with leaders is to say, you might influence my mind, and my mind gets influenced all the time.
Yeah.
You might influence my mind, but hey, in the end of the day, I'm the boss. I have to make the final decision, but I'm opening up the floor as a truth seeker because I want to hear your perspective. Now I may end up concluding that your perspective is flawed and severely flawed, and I may end up discounting everything you've said that I don't feel like there's any value that's been brought to this situation. But way more times than not, my mind, not maybe not the final decision, but something gets tweaked along the way because of the information that other people share with
me. It's funny you were talking about that previous incident, and kudos to you for actually going back to the table and saying, listen, I did not see this through, so this is not the way. But how often do you watch one of these court shows and you hear one side and you're like, there's no way this guy is guilty. There's no way in hell. And 5 minutes later, when you hear the other side, you're like, wait a minute now. It's like, there's nothing the prosecution could say anything that's going to keep me from thinking this guy is not going to prison for the rest of his life. And next thing you know, 5 minutes into it in a commercial, you're like, wait a minute. Maybe I should.
So we all know the guy who played Frank Costanza on Seinfeld, who's also the dad, Arthur Spooner on King of Queens. There's a whole episode about he goes and the prosecution lays out its case and he goes, let's just get this over with. This guy's guilty as hell. And then the next clip is, there's no way he did it. He's completely innocent. And then it would get, I mean, he's just going back and forth the whole time, depending on who he just heard. Yeah.
You brought up something interesting while we were talking about, and I, you know, hypocritical is certainly one of those words that I think we don't hear enough of because it really hurts to be called one of those, but we all have been there. And also, you know, To fight for something that fits our narrative. Yeah. I don't think we use that word narrative enough because it's amazing how someone will be fighting against something because it doesn't fit their narrative. It doesn't fit their argument, doesn't fit their agenda, doesn't fit what's going to help them most. And all of a sudden they realize, okay, it can't be done this way. Whether it's going to hurt the majority or hurt my country or hurt the way I do business. And so I have to change my, and when you change your narrative, sometimes it's looking for that truth that makes you find that narrative. But people that just judge and do things because of their own narrative don't get it. You have to be open-minded to seeing the other way around, the other side.
When you're a truth seeker and everybody has to judge for themselves, I can't judge somebody's level of desire to speak truth. But unless you believe you're always starting out with the truth, you're going to change your mind. And I think communicating that, and the article addressed that. Look, talk about, hey, I used to think this, now I think this, but explain your reasoning and what you come up. You don't come across as wishy-washy. You come across as thoughtful, that you care about truth, that you have enough courage to admit when you're wrong, and that you're willing to change your position. It speaks highly of the person. I value that in somebody, but we kind of just stick to our guns of what we're comfortable with. I don't want to have to rethink it. I don't want to have to go back through all the gnashing of teeth, worrying about, hey, does this align with my political party? Does this align with my church groups? Whatever. Just seek truth and don't worry about where it aligns you. Just follow that path. And sometimes you're going to end up beside your enemy on an issue. And sometimes you're going to be aligned with your friends. Just seek truth and all that'll end up taking care of itself.
We got a lot of emails here. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. You can hear the show at least 5 times a week here in the TKR app, available through Android or Apple. And of course, also here on our podcast, we're available on every major industry out there. And also here on our YouTube channel, it's called Mission Minded. We also have a show called Bite by Bite, which we'll do a little after the show. If you're listening to us live on TKR, Peter in Chicago, is mentioning he works for a software company and that he's been put in a PIP, a performance improvement plan. He said, I don't know what a PIP is. I've done some research on it. It sounds like I'm about ready to lose my job. Could you please tell me what a PIP is?
Okay. Now, a PIP is something that, and I don't know the specifics of his company, but from a boss's perspective, lots of times, one of the things that you try to avoid is if you genuinely care about people, you're like, hey, I want to develop the people we have. And so a PIP can be, hey, we're taking the time to identify the areas that we feel like need improvement. And then we're going to map out what that looks like. So what this might be is say, okay, here's the areas we feel like you don't communicate well and your work ethic is, you're not very productive, whatever. And so here's what we're going to do. And they lay out specific steps that they're going to require of you. And then what they're going to do is they lay out a timeline typically where they come back and then evaluate you on how much you've changed or how much you've improved or not improved. Now, I 100% get why that feels like they're preparing to fire you, because usually a company says, if we're going to terminate somebody, we have to have documentation that we did try to improve. So that performance plan is evidence that they've talked to you, that your performance needs to improve. Now, again, as a listener of the audience, we have no way of knowing whether that's true or not, but somebody there is using this and saying, hey, this is what we're going to be evaluating you on. This are our expectations. Now, they're supposed to lay that out very specifically, and also give you additional training if necessary to make sure that you can meet this standard. So they're saying, okay, we want you to be able to make X amount of widgets, you know, per day. Now, you do have in that plan, you do have the opportunity to reply back and say, I can't do all of these things. There's not enough time in the day. And you come up with some sort of reasonable expectation and execution. I will tell you, when we've done things, we don't necessarily call it that, but I know exactly what's happening. And I can't speak to his boss's motivation, but it is a pathway to either that person performs to the level we want them to, or it is documenting the process and what we tried, and this person could not perform to the level of the company. And we do potentially end up dismissing them if they don't turn things around.
Yeah, it's obviously saying something's wrong. I mean, if the word improvement is
from their perspective
now.
And I think more times than not, people, you know, I really look and evaluate and say and look at what they're saying. Is there value? Now, most people, you should have a job description, and so those expectations should already be laid out in your job description. If it's not, the question is, wait a minute, these are new tests. This is not part of my job description. So documenting things are not just good for the company. They're also good for protects the employee as well, because if somebody comes along and says, wait a minute, you're not doing X, Y, and Z on the pace we think you should. And you go back and you look at your job description and you say, wait a minute, there's nothing in my job description about making widgets at 50 an hour, whatever it is. So if this is something new, a new response, this is what I've agreed to. If you have a new responsibility, well, I need training. I might need pay improvement. I might need all these other things. So it can protect both parties. I would say, I would ask yourself to give yourself an honest evaluation, or to go to a peer that you trust in the company, have them give you an honest opinion, and maybe even go back to your boss and say, hey, you know, I want to work here. I value this job. You know, be honest with me. You know, are you just trying to help make me improve? Or are you, you know, preparing, you know, where do you see me in a year or two? And I know it's scary. I know it's risky. But the reality is the documentation's being built. I hope their motive is to help you improve and provide a pathway so you can be there a long time. But if their expectations are not met, whether it's fair or not, I can't speak to, but it's preparing for a transition if it's not successful.
Is there any type of program? Because this sounds like a marriage counselor to me. And I always tell my friends, now that I've been through this process and it didn't work, don't wait till you have problems before you go to a marriage counselor. I mean, I would tell people right now, if I don't care how open-minded you are and how much you love your mate, there should be something, and it doesn't have to have a third party involved in it, but there should be something where you sit down and communicate your issues, your problems, your fears, your loves, and all these things together, so you don't stray away from each other. But is there anything that, or is that just, is that some type of work assessment that you do?
Yeah, some leaders just cannot have tough conversations.
Yeah.
And they end up waiting, just hoping things get better. And that's not fair to the employee. So documenting, you know, employers should, and an employee feels like this, that, hey, I'm somewhere in this middle zone. I don't really know where I stand. Go have, you know, say, have one talk to you. You know, I'm trying to decide, do I want my future to be with this company? Do you see a future of this company with me being in it? And what can I do to improve? I feel like sometimes, I'm not getting lots of feedback, and it may be because you think I'm not doing a good job. Tell me how to improve. I want to, and I think, boy, I think bosses would value that. And so if you don't wait to just sit back in your cubicle or wherever and wait for your boss to come point out something, if you suspect something's not right, go to your boss, seize the opportunity, seize the day, and you come out looking much better because you're coming in a proactive way seeking, how can I do better? I'm not going to sit around and wait for you to evaluate me. I sense something's not going well. I want to do better. I'm willing to change. I'm willing to do whatever
It'll
it
look great
is
in a court of
he
law
needs to do.
too.
Yeah.
I mean,
Live.
it really would.
100%.
Danielle in Louisville, Kentucky, says, "I have a huge, I'm a huge follower. I have lots of followers on Facebook. She has 39,000 people that follow her on Facebook. She just recently started working for a healthcare company in Louisville, Kentucky, and she feels like she's being snooped on. She said every time she posts everything, she has her own personal Facebook account, and then she has another Facebook account under her business name." She didn't. She wouldn't want to mention me what the business went, but it's a major healthcare company. But she'll have her, like her boss, and she really like a 2 or 3 page thing. Her boss will say, "Hey, I saw you posted something yesterday during lunch," or "I noticed the funny picture you posted yesterday at 2 o'clock. It may have been during times of." In other words, she just feels like she's being looked upon. And again, she loves her social media and she's on it as long as she's getting her work done. You can post whatever you want, whenever you want.
Yeah.
But she wanted to know, is that something that owners do? Do bosses look at employees' accounts? Is it important that if you're posting personal things, it is not on your business account? Because most people who have emails, it is through their work, right? A lot of them
Yeah.
are. And,
Yeah. I
and
mean, yeah. So, I mean, usually we have a personal Gmail, and then you'll have a business. But the reality is, and this is where everybody's learning this and has learned this, in the past few years, one of the things that people do is when you're coming in to be hired or you're being evaluated, people will, search you out on social media. They want to see what your thoughts are. We've talked everything about people having guns, people being drunk. Every picture they have a alcohol in their hand, they have a beer in their hand, and a company goes, there's nothing wrong with having a beer, but this person may have an alcohol problem. And so a lot of bosses will go, okay, wait a minute. They're working on their own. But if they're spending time posting on social media and on the personal side of social media, then they could look at that as time theft, which is, wait a minute, it's not that you're just taking the time to make a 2 or 3 minute post. It's you're thinking about, you're going through your work day where I'm paying you. And again, whether this is true or not, I'm sharing this with you from the boss's perspective, how dedicated they are to finishing their job. Or are they just worried about every day I've got to post 2 or 3 things on Facebook
Is it
because
is that is that is that
I have
a
lots of followers?
is that a fireable offense? I mean, again, you're talking about, is the person getting their job done? You can make an
Well,
argument that there's no posting between 8 and 5, because if you're
I'm going to
posting, you're
tell you,
posting in my time, even regardless of whether it's your email or my email. Yeah.
in a lot of company handbooks, and so I would advise you to go to your HR and make sure you have a copy of your personnel handbook. It has a social media policy in there, and it may say you cannot post on social media, on your private social media during these hours, and it may be monitored. And so if you violate that, they're likely not going to fire you the first time. And the boss may just be simply, and I've done this before where I point out that I've noticed something. I'm not celebrating that I've noticed it, and it's just letting them know that I'm aware in hopes of that they will make a change. But if they don't make the change, then a further conversation could be coming along. I think, again, going back to what we were saying a minute ago, if I were her, I'd take the initiative and go sit down and say, look, I have this social media following. It's a large following. I also do business. Here's kind of what I would like to do. Tell me from your perspective, is that okay with you? Or tell me and get clarity. You always come out better with communicating what your concerns are. But lots of times what people, they don't want to know what it is. They want to operate in murkiness because they have a feeling, oh, if I bring it up, they're going to shut me down. And I don't want to be shut down, so I'm not going to bring it up. And the reality is that a lot of bosses, they monitor your Facebook for content to see what kind of person that's representing their company. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing how much time you're spending on social media and not spending doing their job. And both of those, like I said, they catch you one time, two times, they're likely not going to fire you. But if it's documented and they document it and tell you, okay, this is a no-go, and then they catch you on it again, then you're looking at possible termination.
More emails in the future and anytime. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. For Michael Coleman, this is Mission Minded. Make sure you listen up for our Bite by Bite segment comes up here. It's a little shorter, but it's about the non-for-profit business of Feeding America and the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Coming up next.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.